17th of September 1968.
I'm here with David Shrigley to talk about your piece that you've made for the Folkestone Triennial. And I wanted to start by saying, how did you conceive of this idea? Because it's both very clever, playful, but also relates very much to a site.
Well, I guess the criteria for making a public artwork is that I think the most successful public artworks are site-specific. They deal with the context. When I thought about making a work, I've always wanted to make a lamppost for some reason. I have actually made lampposts before, and I don't quite know why I have a fascination with lampposts, but anyway, I wanted to make one, and the most interesting lampposts, or the most visually appealing lampposts, shall I say, are on the Lees in Folkestone. So I went up and looked at those lampposts and had a few different ideas, and eventually came up with an idea to reimagine one of the lampposts by making a replica of it from memory. And I realised this wasn't something I could actually do myself, because I was so keen on the lampposts, I'd looked at them quite a bit too much. So I think my representation of it, my recollection of it, would probably have been a bit too accurate. So I got a complete stranger. I got one of Camille, who is a student of one of my friends, Kenny Hunter, who teaches at Edinburgh College of Art. And I asked him to find a student who he thought would be good at it. So anyway, he selected Camille. And Camille came down, I picked her up at the airport, drove her here in the car, got her to shut her eyes, and walked her over to the lamppost. And I let her look at it for about a minute, maybe less than a minute. And then she made a few notes and went back into the car. And then we went back to Brighton and she did a detailed drawing with all the sizes. And we went into my garden and I held up a tape measure at the top of a ladder. And so she figured out how tall it would be and all the design and what colour it was from memory. And I guess she's only in her early 20s, so her memory is probably a lot clearer, a lot better than mine. As you get older, I guess it's one out, one in, as far as memories are concerned, or it seems that way anyway. So anyway, Camille went back to Edinburgh, and as part of her studies, she made this project. She cast it at Powder Hall Bronze in Edinburgh, who I worked with, hence wanting to do something with somebody from Edinburgh. And Kenny Hunter, who's quite a well-known sculptor, an old friend of mine, supervised her, and he actually has a space in the Bronze Foundry as well, so that was pretty handy. She made this piece based on her memory of it, and it's actually worked really well because whilst it's quite accurate, it's still not that accurate. And if you didn't, it's not glaringly obvious as to what's happened, but if you actually were to examine it in closely at all, you would see that it's completely the wrong height, for one thing. And whilst it's roughly the right design, it's the height is sort of slightly comic element. And also, I realised that it's the wrong colour. The base is the wrong colour. They're all grey here, and she's remembered it as a sort of pastely green. But I realised why she did that is because we went back to Brighton, and somehow I think the green of the Brighton civic furniture has seeped into her consciousness, perhaps.
Well, I found that fascinating because sometimes when people remember things, they remember the complementary colour. So they remember something as green when it's red, or they transpose things in memory. And I love those little quirks because it's just how memory works. And of course, Folkestone, I was really fascinated because it's a seaside town and people come here, have a holiday, have memories of a place. You know, people might say, oh, I came here when I was a child. And again, you know, they probably wouldn't mention the lamppost, or maybe they kissed under a lamppost, or, you know, there's a kind of really interesting relationship of the lamppost being a place where you can be both seen and illuminated, or you might look at something like a map. So I just wondered, obviously the memory, but other things. I'm intrigued by why you were fascinated by lampposts. It seems kind of an interesting thing to be fascinated. Was it from children's stories or something like that? The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe? I don't know.
I don't know really. I think that I grew up in a kind of red brick suburb in the Midlands, and there wasn't really a lot of Victorian architecture. Like the architecture and the civic environment, the lampposts, the benches, the litter bins were really super functional and not designed and fairly modern where I lived. And that was my the environment, the visual environment, the physical environment in which I grew up in terms of the street. And then when I was 19, I moved to Glasgow to study at Glasgow School of Art, which, as you know, is a very historically significant Victorian city. It was the second city of the empire at the end of the 19th century, and has all this history is really visible in terms of things like lampposts and railings and all this street furniture, street sculpture that is there. And at that time, I think that made quite a big impression on me. It was what I found Glasgow very exciting and mysterious, that it had this really visual history, whereas the suburb of Leicester that I grew up in was built in 19, was a village that was then built part of the 1950s, and the house that I grew up in was built in the late 50s. And I'm probably like the majority of the population of the UK, I grew up in the suburbs. I mean, it wasn't a bad suburb, it wasn't a good suburb, it just was dull and boring, I guess. Nothing wrong with it, but just was visually unappealing. And to me, Glasgow seemed very exciting and very beautiful. It had this sort of faded Victorian grandeur that I found really attractive. So I think perhaps my interest in looking at things like that is sort of based on that. And the fact that I used to live in a Victorian townhouse in Glasgow, which, you know, had all these period features that are quite unusual, it's probably not the norm for most people when you think about it. I guess the majority of people in the UK don't live in a Victorian house, you know, that has elaborate cornicing and elaborate railings outside and a Victorian lamppost outside. So I think maybe my interest stems from that juxtaposition of parallelity between my childhood experiences and my experiences as an adult. But so I guess I'm interested in looking at the details. In a way, it's a bit like it's also a bit like sort of estate agent speak as well. You know, period features. Maybe having bought and sold a couple of houses in recent years, maybe I've become quite attuned to period features.
Well, I was going to mention something else, because recently there's been quite a lot of anxiety about historic lampposts being replaced to make better lampposts that, you know, can be organised by computers when the lights go and things like that. Some have been replaced in London, but obviously places like this, there's a kind of heritage, as you say, the heritage lamppost. But also citing the work, because obviously you came for a visit. Was it obvious to you where you would want to place your work? Did you walk around and think, yes, that's where I need to cite it? Or,
well, I have to thank Ben, who was the project manager, and Lewis, the curator, for identifying that site, because I decided what I wanted to do, but I didn't know exactly where it would go. And I was hoping that there might be a space somewhere, and there was. I don't know whether there was actually a lamppost there, or whether, I think it might have been a gap where something else was, but there's sort of a natural gap there with a hard standing area. So it was, we were quite lucky in that respect that it was available and it was there, and it was a sort of perfect place really, because it really, you know, that narrative thing of walking along the Lees as I did today from the station and then coming upon the lamppost, seeing it in the distance.
I wanted also to ask you about the whole idea of permanence, because this is a triennial, most of the work will not become permanent. Do you hope your work will be one of the permanent pieces in the town?
I think it's going to be permanent, whether they want it or not, to be honest. I don't want it back. So it's not really, it doesn't really mean anything out of context, though. It's not.
It's very site-specific. Sorry, it's very site-specific.
Exactly,
And I also wanted to ask you, people don't realise, I think, sometimes the amount of planning that goes into siting a piece of public sculpture that's safe, that can't be kind of knocked over, these kind of things. Did you have to be very involved in that, all the permissions and the kind of safety aspects of the work?
Well, it's very much a collaborative effort, so I was fortunate that my colleagues here at the at Triennial, at the Creative Foundation, figured all that out for me. So that was good. I mean, there are a few things, a few compromises we had to make, but in general, we were quite fortunate. But I guess there's a very much a precedent for the town council trying to be as accommodating as they can, because it's the project as a whole is quite valuable for the town, I think.
And finally, I just wanted to say, of course, you're very much known for your imaginative, clever, quirky drawings and sketches, as well as other work you make, obviously this being one of the examples of it, where you work in different media. And I just wanted to ask you, did you do lots of little quirky sketches? Did you, you know, once it had been described to you and you had worked out the memory aspect, did you then start doodling and kind of doing your own kind of way that you work on pieces of paper or not?
No, I mean, I don't really work like that. I'm more of a conceptual artist, even when I'm making drawings. I mean, it's very much, making drawings is a very much a process thing of image and text together. So when I make a work that's just solely an idea, I don't make any drawings at all. In fact, I didn't do anything. I didn't even, I don't think I even wrote anything down for this. I just made phone calls. It was a bit like, I don't know, Tino Segal or something.
I rather like that in this age of everything being kind of recorded and pinned down, that they're kind of ether conversations.
Well, the only, in a way, it's a bit of a problem for me in the sense that making works like this, but, you know, I've sort of set a precedent for doing anything and everything, really. But people associate my work mostly with funny drawings, I guess. So to make work that's sort of rather different from that is perhaps problematic. But generally, I do. Yeah, I don't really make a lot of drawings for the objects that I make. For example, the fourth plinth piece, I made one drawing for that, and I made a model of it. I made a maquette, I made one drawing. And that was just for the proposal before I even knew I was going to do it. And then the actual thing was just made in clay. I do what I need to do. I guess I'm an ideas person. You know, the work is based on ideas, so I don't do anything that I don't have to do. I'm really not a very classically trained artist. It's not the way that you would teach a student to go about making a public project, but that's, I don't know, seems to work for me. But the only drawings for this are Camille's drawings, which I think are really, that's something really nice that you've shared it with somebody else, and that it's been hopefully a valuable experience for her.
Thank you, Debbie. You give very good